Ahead this afternoon, this conference call is now being recorded.
Great. Thank you very much. My name is Robin Gross, and I'm the chair of the Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group, and this morning's call is a GNSO candidacy call with Thomas Rickert, who's been nominated by the Non-Contracted Parties House for the GNSO chair position. So that's a little background for the recording, and I just want to thank Thomas for taking this time to speak with us this morning and let us know sort of where he's coming from on this candidacy. And so let me just turn it over to you, Thomas, and I've got some questions at the end, but let me just start with you and sort of if you want to just sort of lay out your position and your view for the GNSO chair and where you'd like to take things, I'd really appreciate it.
Certainly. Thank you very much, Robin, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to say a few words about me and about the potential plans should I actually be elected GNSO Council Chair. Now, maybe to start with, I should say that I have only been on the GNSO Council since last October, and it was very flattering for me to hear a lot of people coming to me and asking me whether I would consider accepting a nomination to be the GNSO Council Chair. And that was after the ICANN meeting in Prague, and I very much appreciated this because obviously I'm not a person that has a too long track record in ICANN's history, although I have been working in the domain industry, both as a lawyer as well as in other capacities, and I'll get back to that in a second, since 1999. I found it encouraging to get that feedback because I am a NOMCOM appointee to the GNSO Council, and that means that I don't have a particular group that I respond to or that I get feedback from during my work as a counselor. And so it was good to hear that obviously not everything that I did on the GNSO Council was wrong, but that actually people from various groups from both houses appreciated the work that I've done. And so it sort of came as a surprise to me to hear that people would like to see me in, or some people would like to see me in the position of the GNSO Council Chair. But then, you know, this put my brain at work, and I've been carefully considering this for a couple of weeks because I do know that there's an enormous commitment in time that's going along with that position, and you don't take those decisions lightly. So I have investigated whether that's something that I could do, both in terms of my professional life as well as my private life, because it will have an enormous impact on both. I finally came to the conclusion that I should accept a nomination in case one of the houses should choose to make one, and this has taken place in the meantime, as you know. And I'm going to say a couple of sentences about why I think this might be a good decision for the present time. I think that ICANN is currently going through a very challenging phase with the new GTLDs being launched. If they're launched as planned, then this is going to start in the last quarter of the next year. And there are, you know, that brings ICANN much more to the public attention, and not only the potential attention by the general public, but also the GAC and other external and internal stakeholders will watch very closely what ICANN is doing. And I'm a strong believer in ICANN's bottom-up multi-stakeholder approach, and I think that in this phase of particular and increasing scrutiny, we have to make sure that the GNSO, as a policy-making body, and its council steering this or managing this policy development process is as effective as can be and actually delivers. Now, how can this work? I think that there are a couple of occasions, and I think I'm not the only person that has observed that, and I've been quite outspoken as a counselor on that. We've seen several occasions where the GNSO Council and the GNSO has been bypassed and decisions have been made without consulting with the GNSO Council or other groups in the GNSO. And I think for that not to happen, the GNSO and its council need to be very effective. And I think that part of the reasons why we have been circumvented at times might be that the GNSO council is not seen to be very effective and not delivering results. And so I think that in this phase, it would be a good idea to have a GNSO council chair that is as neutral as possible. And since I'm a NOMCOM appointee, and I'm not saying this because I'm one, but I think that in this phase, an NCA as council chair would actually be a very good idea, because that person does not drive any particular group's agenda. Although I trust each and every candidate for the GNSO council chair position to try to be as neutral as possible, I still think that it makes a difference whether that person is inside a stakeholder group or a constituency, or whether that person has been appointed by the nominating committee and is not in one of these groups. And so I think it would add to the credibility and add weight to the positions the council will have to take in the course of the next couple of months and years, if these were maybe presented and the processes and debates are chaired by somebody who is as neutral as possible. Now, I think also that we have to make sure that we can work together as efficiently as possible. That means that, you know, although I'm on the council for only one or almost 1 year now, people might say this history is not long enough for giving me the standing to do the position, but I think that at the same time I have the great opportunity not having a history that might play against me. So I think that the various groups might be able to work with me without any suspicions of things that might or might not have happened in the past. So I think that can be a benefit of having an NCA as chair, and having me in particular would be a good idea, at least as far as I'm concerned, because I think that I do have the skills in order to lead the group as efficiently as possible. I am a lawyer by training, and I'm partner of a law firm specializing in IT law, and I'm working on domain-related cases as well as advising registries and registrars since 1999. I'm also working with ICO, which is the German Internet Industry Association, and I've been working with ICO also since 1999 in various functions, and it was my role to lead national and international projects and to put teams together that would actually produce results. And I think that this is something that is key. You need somebody as chair who is capable of actually working as a team player. And I do know that the chair can't deal with the huge workload on its own. There are the co-chairs, the vice chairs, the two vice chairs that I would seek to work very efficiently with, and also there's excellent staff in ICANN supporting the council. And I think that mixture needs to be in place in order to be efficient. I know that there is an awful lot of work going on behind the scene and remaining almost invisible to the broader community, but I've consulted with past chairs to see what their experiences were and workload and commitment that is needed. And I think that I'll be able to free up the required resources to do the job full throttle. Now, on top of that, I think that when that a chair needs to be able to bring together diverging views. And to give you one example of my previous commitments, I have been the president of the INHOP organization, the INHOP Association, which is an umbrella association of hotlines or tip lines taking complaints from the general public about allegedly illegal material online. And the members of that organization that are running these tip lines are partially governmental, they are partially NGO-driven, and they are partially operated by internet industry associations or by registries. And you can imagine that all these, you know, coming from all parts of the world, have very different legal, linguistic, cultural backgrounds, and it was my role to bring those together, to listen to each and every one of them, to be as inclusive as possible, to then be able to draft policy and best practice for this group and to actually achieve results despite all the differences. And that's something that I did for 3 years. And during my term as president there, the organization grew quite substantially. And we forged trust with all sorts of external and internal groups. And I would say that the experience there is what one might call multi-stakeholder mini, because certainly the organization was smaller, but I think that the challenges are partially congruent. So I think that I do have the managerial skills, I have the patience to listen, and I have the ability to chair discussions, as controversial as they might be, and deliver results. And I think that is what is needed at the moment.
Great. Thank you very much. If I could just maybe ask a couple of questions. How do you see the degree of oversight needed by the chair, or I should say needed by the council, over what the chair does when the chair goes and speaks on behalf of the council or sends a letter on behalf of the council? What's that? How do you see that relationship there as a good working relationship?
Well, I think that that pretty much depends on the concrete matter involved. So there may be subjects where the chair can get a little bit of flexibility in displaying what the council's position is, while there are other contentious subjects where actually very, very close collaboration with the whole council is needed in order to craft a position. In the wrap-up session that we had in Prague, the council meeting in Prague, we actually had a discussion exactly about that point. And I think that while the chair, or it's the chair's role to reflect the position of the council, so the chair should never make up genus or council positions on the fly. But I think depending on the subject matter involved, if it's something where the position is very clear, and the position being clear does not necessarily mean that there has to be consensus, but there can even be diverging views which are very, very clear, then one might give some flexibility to the chair and allow the chair to speak and present those, certainly presenting those accurately and not misrepresenting the position of the council, while there might be other scenarios in which that just would not be appropriate. At the time, there was actually one example that we discussed, because there was a room full of councillors and we were drafting, you know, as a joint task, word by word, a statement that the chair should read out, although that was something that was not contentious. And that sort of was the starting point for the discussion. And again, I think that the chair should never go any further than presenting a council position that has previously been discussed and adopted, or accurately displaying the status of the various different views. And also, there might be issues where a position actually needs to be cast in concrete if deemed necessary by the councillors. But that needs to be discussed on a case-to-case basis.
Hi, this is Aubrey. Can I ask a follow-up question on that one?
Sure.
Welcome. Hi, Thomas. Sorry I was late. And I'll be leaving a little early. But anyway, in respect to that, what do you feel should be your position in terms of expressing your own views as an NCA, both inside the council and working groups and outside? How do you feel that needs to be handled?
Well, I think that my primary focus, should I be elected, should be chairing and not presenting my own views. And should I, in an exceptional circumstance, actually put myself at the end of the queue, I would flag that very clearly as being my own personal opinion. But since I'm not a councillor originating from one of the stakeholder groups or constituencies, I would certainly not be in a position where I need to change hats during the meetings and then present the views of the respective group.
Okay. If I can go on with the question a little. But one of the reasons you were picked as an NCA by NomCom is because they expected you to be able to express a certain, you know, user or outside community viewpoint on occasion. And so I'm curious how, if you see in any way a conflict between the mandate that's been put on you by NomCom and that. And I guess I hope I didn't hear in your statement a little bit of the regular deprecation we hear in the GNSO of NomCom people. They don't really belong to a constituency, so their opinion doesn't really matter, so they don't have to change hats. I'm really wondering how much have you thought through that conflict of being in the role and having been appointed with a particular point of view, and of course, you know, knowing that I was in that same position. So I'm kind of curious to how you see it. Do you really see it as just an exceptional circumstance where you'd have an opinion and you put yourself, or do you see that you have a right to an opinion on every topic, but that there's a special way you need to handle it?
Certainly the latter is the case, and by no means did I intend to say that I don't have a right to say things or present my views. What I'm saying is that I perceive my role and the special role of being an NCA that might be elected the GNSO Council Chair as focusing on being a chair and not focusing on presenting my views to the group. So I think that at present, maybe in particular, but that might be true for the whole history of the GNSO or its predecessor, the DNSO, that we are in challenging times and we need to make sure that we get things done. And I would try to focus rather than on managing the process together with the vice chairs and supported by staff to get results, rather than to try and speak up on each and every incident that is being discussed. But okay. If I say something, then I would certainly do so and flag it accordingly.
Okay, thanks. I was just curious because I knew that I had taken a certain position on this and we had never talked about it. So I was curious to see.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a question on a somewhat related or non-related topic, and basically a lot of our members are very supportive of the multi-stakeholder model of internet governance that we have at ICANN. However, we're seeing a lot of enlargement, if you will, of authority going towards governments in this multi-stakeholder environment, and in a zero-sum game, when more power is going to governments, that means that there is less to civil society and to private business. So I think, how do you see the appropriate role of the different stakeholders, and how do we maintain the GNSO as the appropriate body for policy development recommendations to the board, given this enlarging role that we're seeing from governments and ICANN? I hope that question made sense. Maybe it was a little confusing. There's a lot of things wrapped up.
It makes perfect sense, and certainly there are a lot of discussions about the role of the GAC, even going as far as to certain individuals that would like to see the GAC go away. That will certainly not be the case, and whether we like it or not, we have to accept the fact that the GAC is there, and I think it's good for the GAC to be there, because that adds credibility to the organization. And I'm a firm believer of those being in the GAC as government representatives are supporters of the multi-stakeholder approach. So these government representatives actually, at least those that I speak to, I'm sure go back to their governments and defend ICANN and the approach that ICANN is taking. Now, as regards the strength of the governments, I think we have to be very careful that a balance is being maintained. And certainly the authority of governments or the influence of governments should not increase. However, I think that at least part of the response to that is that in order to maintain that status and not have the governmental impact increase, we have to make sure that we deliver. So the ICANN community, the GNSO, the GNSO Council, and each and everybody who is active in this approach need to make sure that we deliver results. Because if we manage to deliver results, and those results should not necessarily be to give the GAC what they want, but to provide a response and a result in a timely manner that is well thought out and explained. And I think if we manage to do that, then the GNSO as such is being taken seriously, and then it will be a good partner to other stakeholders in this approach. And maybe if I can add to that, I think looking at the history of ICANN is a very young organization, and I think it takes a while, and we have to accept that we need to come to modus operandi between the various stakeholders to be able to talk to each other with a language they both or all understand, and to have procedures that all parties understand, and then to mutually respect what can be done and what can't be done. And, we see different regulatory approaches in various national jurisdictions, and they're all characterized of governments being hesitant, to put it that way, to give authority or power that they deem to be in their, they deem to be their sole power, to other parties or share them. But I think this is imperative, particularly at the international level, to be efficient. But I think that we need to be patient. We need to work hard to have good collaborative approach and an atmosphere of mutual respect.
Okay, thank you. Aubrey, did you have any other questions, or is there anyone else on the line who has a question for Thomas?
I have another question.
Unless
you asked in the beginning. And I'm assuming that anybody that wants to be chair has studied the bylaws and all the other stuff. And I'm wondering what your view is of the board taking actions on GTDLD policy without GNSO prior recommendation.
Well, we touched upon this issue a little bit earlier in this call, and my view is that it's okay. I'm more than happy to elaborate a little bit more on that, but I personally brought up this issue both at the council level as well with the board, and because I think that that it's not appropriate for a collaborative relationship between the board and the GNSO council if on certain important aspects the GNSO council is not consulted prior to making decisions.
I guess I don't know what you mean by appropriate, because do you think that the bylaws in any way prohibit it, or what would be the basis of it being inappropriate?
What I mean is that when it comes to policy-related matters, that the GNSO should be involved. The GNSO Council should be involved. Because if, and I think that I'm not the only one, and I think that's the reason for your question, that sometimes when decisions were made, you got the feeling that maybe for the board things didn't move quickly enough, so that the board made a decision without prior consultation.
Well, I guess I find myself actually on the other side, but this isn't about what I believe. Because I'm really just curious. You said should not, but I'm not sure I understand what the basis of that should is, because when I read the bylaws, it really only talks about what the board needs to do when the GNSO gets it together to make a recommendation. The only place where there seems to be an absolute on it is with contract items inside the picket fence. But outside of items without the picket fence, outside the picket fence, I'm not sure where that obligation for should comes from. And, I mean, I suppose it could come from, the GNSO being a respectable body that does good work and fairly views all things. But if the GNSO is, basically lags behind, doesn't get anything done, is always divided, which is by its nature divided, then I'm not sure where any obligation for the board comes from.
I agree to your reading of the bylaws, and it has more to do with the very reasons that you just gave. That I think that in order to be seen to be working efficiently, or other, let me put it the other way around, if the board will be more inclined to consult with the GNSO Council if it is productive.
Okay. And have you already covered how, when you've got a G Council that's twice bifurcated and at least on the non-contracted party's house, that division between the two stakeholder groups is rather deep. How you make it efficient, or, you know, there's a lot of us that think that perhaps we've been redesigned for inefficiency. So I'm wondering, as chair, how would you make that efficient? How would you, you know, make that both efficient and consensus?
Well, certainly there's no guarantee as to whether that's that's possible, but I think that that my idea would be to get discussions concluded rather sooner than later. Because I think that oftentimes we have discussions and then we part when it comes to face-to-face meetings or even in telephone conferences, and we part and don't have tangible results. And I think that despite all the differences, what is needed is a culture where we listen to each other, go back to the respective groups, get feedback, and then maybe reconvene, and if possible, come to some sort of a decision. So I think that part of the solution for that could be to actually be able to bring things to a close more rapidly.
Okay, thanks. Good luck with that.
Well, you have to try, and you have to try very hard. And I know that it's not granted that if I were elected, that it would I would actually succeed with this. But I think that we somehow have to speed things up, also to avoid volunteer fatigue, because I think that a lot of the frustration stems from the fact that the projects don't really move on, or sometimes you know, they just take so long that they more or less become irrelevant, and that makes or might make people think that what they're doing is in vain. So I think if we manage to speed things up, then actually we would also, you know, give a positive signal to all the volunteers.
Okay. That's a discussion for you and I to have someday over a beer. I don't believe in volunteer fatigue. I feel it's a bogus notion. But, you know, we could talk about that some other time. One last question. You talked about GAC and its role in the overall scheme of things. I'm wondering what you think about the role within the GNSO is of advice from other ACs, for example, ALAC, ESAC, and others, and even the GAC, if they ever get it together, to actually work with the GNSO and deign to give their advice to the GNSO. How should the GNSO work with them? We've seen one model here where we're also grateful that they talk to us in the drafting team, that we're bending over backwards to, you know, to suck up to them. And, you know, we've seen other cases where other ACs, for example, ALAC, will send something and go, yeah, yeah, right. So I'm wondering, you know, are all ACs equal in the eyes of the GNSO? Is their advice equal in the eyes of the GNSO, since there is no bylaw mandate one way or another? And how should one deal with those?
Well, I think looking at the original idea, they should all have the same priority. And I think that I would, you know, should I be elected, would try to treat them all with the same respect and listen to their advice in the same way. However, it seems to be that the GAC's voice is louder in certain aspects, and we would need to deal with that certainly. But I think that for ICANN to be able to fulfill its mission, I think all of the advisory committees need to have the same strength when it comes to their positions.
Okay. thanks. Love that answer. That answers my question. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much. Does anyone else have any questions on the line?
Yes, Robin, I do. It's Christina McCauley here. Can you
Please,
hear me?
Go ahead.
Yes. Good afternoon, Thomas. Thank you very much for taking this call. I came in a little bit late, so I do apologize. Maybe you have already covered this question. In terms, I understand that you're very keen to navigate decisions to close, so I've picked up on that point. Maybe you covered, but in terms of your time capacity and percentages, how much time do you think you'll be able to afford as a chair to obviously pushing the decisions along?
Well, I think that the time commitment will be, you know, at least for the initial phase, I've calculated to reserve some 3 to 4 days per week on the council chair work. I think that certainly over the year, the workload will vary a little bit, but I'm prepared to invest a substantial amount of time to that work because, you know, if you do it, then you need to do it properly. And I have recently hired an additional lawyer for my law firm so that I can, you know, have more flexibility. We're 7 lawyers in total, for your information. So I have flexibility to pass things on. And on top of that, I'm not a 40-hour per week guy. So I think I've worked extensively, and I'll be able to put what is needed at the disposal of the council.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I don't need to go into any more detail, but I think you covered that very well in terms of trying to bring decisions to a close, which is required. Thank you. Robin, that's
Thank
me.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else on the line who would like to ask a question of Thomas? Okay, hearing none, I will just ask Thomas if he's got any final remarks he'd like to leave the stakeholder group with.
Or questions of us.
Or,
well,
yes.
I'd just like to thank you again for your time and interest, and certainly should you have more questions, please get back to me, and I'm more than happy to schedule another call or answer them by email. And Avery, thanks for the invitation to ask questions myself. I don't have any at the moment, but I will think about it and get back to you with more questions should there be any.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much. And what we've done for the last couple of calls is we've sent the audio MP3 off to the NCSG mailing list, and members have listened to it, and then we've had some questions from the members that I've just forwarded on to the candidate. So I imagine we'll have, you know, something similar here where now that this call's happened, people will listen to it and then have a question or two, which I would be more than happy to forward on to you. And maybe we could do another call if folks want to do that as well.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And have a great day.
Yes, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.